Welcome to Painting the Midnight Oil Podcast with your host, Dan Oils.
Life is good. This is my favorite time of year. It's like 65 degrees outside, a little breezy. It's a perfect 72 degrees inside my art studio / podcast studio / enclosed trailer / camper. My kids call it the camper. So naturally, that's what I always want to say. I have to like catch myself. I don't have a fan working right now. I don't have an air conditioning unit. I don't have my space heater plugged in. It's just naturally 72 degrees in here. The AC inside my house was recently fixed. It wasn't cheap, but it's fixed. So it's been much more tolerable inside my camper and inside the house. It kind of got me thinking back to when I was working in construction and working as a land surveyor. Primarily working outside. And sometimes you would strike up these conversations with people, especially if I was working in a neighborhood as a land surveyor. They would always, not always, but sometimes they would say, you know, it must be really nice working outside. And for like 4 weeks out of the year, it was really nice working outside. You know, this time of year, yeah, can't beat it. It's like 60 degrees. Especially as the leaves are starting to change and starting to fall, you start to get like these fall smells and the fall weather, and you're not sweating, and it's just a different type of environment. I mean, I love fall. And those were the days. And then springtime, you know, you finally have everything thawing and melting, and the trees are starting to blossom and bloom, and that's another beautiful time of the year. But the vast majority of the year is outside of that window of time. And the vast majority of the year, it seemed like when you're working outside, is either 95 degrees with 100% humidity and mosquitoes are trying to bite you and you're working in poison ivy and you're constantly wearing long sleeve shirts and pants and you're just sweating through all of your shirts and all of your layers. That is what my experience was land surveying most of the time, it seemed like. Or if it's not that weather, it's, you know, 20 degrees and you're trying to dig in the ground for property corners and the ground is frozen solid and you're literally taking like pickaxes to the ground so you can try and dig and find these metal pipes. And that's also equally as miserable. But for about 4 weeks out of the year, yes, it is a wonderful time to be outside. Now, I'm kind of being sarcastic. It's not quite like that, but you know, it seems like when the weather is really good, when it's that 72 degrees where you feel like you are in a climate-controlled environment, you don't even think about it. At least that was my experience. You don't even fully realize. You're never thinking, wow, it's really nice out. You just are focusing on the task at hand, and you're not thinking about the weather because it's not inclement or it's not extreme. You know, you're not sweating or you're not freezing, so you're just focusing on the job. You're not actually just appreciating the day. And I think that's a metaphor for life. And I think that is similar to how a lot of us, not to speak for anyone else besides myself. But I think a lot of people do that. I think sometimes if things are going well, we're not appreciative of when things are going well. We only notice things when they're uncomfortable or when we are being inconvenienced. And to kind of drive that point home a little bit further, you know, if you are working in an environment, a climate-controlled environment, I bet you would very rarely think, oh, wow, it's really comfortable in here. You're just expecting that. You're just focusing on the task at hand. You're focused on that email or that project or that TPS report or that meeting. And you're not thinking about, wow, it's really nice. I'm not sweating. I'm not freezing. You may casually look out the window and compare your environment to the outside environment, but it's really kind of lost on you. And I think sometimes, well, not sometimes, I'm guilty of that a lot, where I really have to focus on being grateful and appreciative because I'm always focused on what I need to fix or what I still need to achieve. And I try to be self-aware and I try to you know, reflect on when things are going well and how far I have come in this journey. And sometimes it is difficult. And sometimes it's good to, you're reminded of how much you do have when you hit those obstacles or when you hit that resistance. It kind of makes you stop and say, oh yeah, you know, I do need to be more appreciative when X, Y, and Z happen. And so, yeah, it's 72 degrees in here and I'm going to stop and I'm going to appreciate that. And I'm going to be grateful for that because in a few weeks, I'm going to have to crank up the space heater. I'm going to have to come in here. I'm going to have to turn it on and let it cook for a little while before I walk in here. But most of the time, I forget to do that. And it takes me about half the time to warm up. And then I'm only really enjoying it for 10 minutes and then I have to go back to bed. But I've been, you know, very grateful, or trying to be more grateful for those little things. Last week, I spoke a lot about my latest painting. And I talked a lot about my latest collection. And I also talked about kind of the circumstances surrounding that painting. Some of the gut punches that I received, you know, different risks that I took, some unexpected outcomes that I encountered or experienced. And I realized that I got to the very end of the episode and I never really dove into the piece itself. And there's so much going on with that piece, and it's a piece that I'm especially proud of, that I wanted to take a few minutes to go over it. My father-in-law came over. I've always gotten along really well with my father-in-law. My father-in-law and my dad are very similar, and they have similar backgrounds, both blue-collar guys. And that's one of the reasons why I think I get along with them so well, is that we both have similar backgrounds. But he collects art now. Now, he's retired, and you know, he has some disposable income, so he buys art every once in a while. And so he's always asking me about my art. So I had just finished a beach trip in Ocean City. I decided to show him and he was just like blown away. And I that's one of my favorite things about creating art, especially if it's a gift for somebody, and handing it over to somebody or revealing it to somebody and just watching their facial expression and just watching their reaction. There's very little experiences that can rival that for me. When you're able to just make a connection with another person on a level, on a deep level, and knowing that you are responsible for creating that connection. It's a really incredible feeling. So I was just watching him take in this painting, and this is a 3-foot by 4-foot painting. And one reason why I'm glad that he saw it is because he spent a lot of time taking my wife to Ocean City when you know, my wife was growing up. And as I mentioned last episode, this is a tradition that my wife and I have continued with our own children. And he was like, you know, so he's asking me questions about the painting. And, you know, sometimes I forget that, you know, what I see or what I know I put into it or the intent behind certain elements could easily be lost on somebody else if I'm not explicitly telling them the significance or the symbolism. So he was like, you know, you really need to tell more people about that so they understand fully what all this means. I mean, because he appreciated it beforehand, but it wasn't until I actually explained everything and the significance behind all the pieces that he really started to appreciate it. So this was my opportunity to do just that. Now, I think it's also important to do that because I know that within art, there are a lot of people that say that, oh, art is in the eye of the beholder. And yes, I agree with that to a degree. You know, what do you think about that? Because I'm not fully on board with that idea. And I'll tell you why. You know, if you've listened all the way through, you know that years ago, I mean, this was like right when my wife and I were dating. We had just moved in together. So we actually started living together before we were married. So when we were living together, I had started a company called WDCTs, and it focused on creating symbols and designs that essentially paid respect or represented imagery from the Washington metropolitan area. And it was just an effort for me to be creative, but also use my creativity to unite people together under similar symbols and similar culture or designs or landmarks. It was a lot of fun. And it was a lot of fun because a lot of my designs I had to be very careful with because I didn't want to infringe on any copyright or copyrighted designs. So there's this one shirt in particular that I was attempting to create at the time. And, you know, back then, the team, formerly known as the Washington Redskins, had just drafted a player named Robert Griffin III. And he was, I think it was the number two pick overall, but one of the top draft picks. And he was supposed to be the savior of our franchise. He was going to be our long-term quarterback. And we were all very excited. I was like, you know what? I need to make a shirt that pays respect to RG3, welcomes him to DC, you know, captures this excitement that we have in this area for RG3. But how can I do that without violating a copyright for the Washington Redskins? And at the time, violate or infringe upon a copyright that RG3 had passed himself. So he had actually trademarked RG3. So I was like, man, how can I figure something out that I can like carefully weave in between these two copyrights, but also make it very clear that this is an RG3 shirt? So I'm like, all right, well, what if I just did like an R and a G? What's three and related to the Washington Redskins? And I was thinking, and then instantly I knew because, you know, I have a general background of the team. I used to write for a Washington Redskins blog. The Redskins organization had won three Super Bowls. They had three Lombardi trophies. And so the design was RG and then three Lombardi trophies. I'm assuming that he still writes for the Washington Post. I'm sure, if nothing else, he's still involved in the sports journalism industry, profession. But there was this very popular writer. He was writing for the Post, and he had a really large following on Twitter. And he covered like DC area sports stories. I had tweeted him back when I had Twitter. I tweeted him a picture of the design. And in the past, he had retweeted the design, which was huge. That was like one of my biggest accomplishments was just getting retweeted by this guy because he had so many followers. And it was just a way of getting my designs out there. Well, when he retweeted the design, he was like, oh, looks like some fans are a little overzealous about the amount of Super Bowls they think we're going to win with RG3 as the quarterback. And then everyone just started trashing the design. And everyone was just like, oh, this typical Redskins fan, what an idiot and all this stuff. And I was like, whoa, 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 I never said any of that. And I was at a job, I was land surveying. I was at a job in Bethesda, and I kept on going to my work truck like every like 15 minutes because my phone was just blowing up with like all this hate from a design. That was not the intent behind the design at all. And so I like got in this back and forth with this guy, and I was like, dude, I'm like trying to run a business here. Like, you are basically trashing my judgment. You're trashing the intent of the design of the shirt. And I wasn't like cursing him out or anything, but I was pissed. I was heated. I was like, you have a responsibility with all of your followers to make sure that you are reporting things correctly. Not once did I ever suggest that I thought that RG3 was going to win three Super Bowls. It's because the Redskins already have three Super Bowls. Like, how did you overlook that? How did you miss that? How did you jump to that conclusion? And his response made me feel so stupid. Because, like, I wasn't cursing or anything, but I was so mad. And he replied, wow. And then that's all he said at first. And I was like, oh, man, I think I was a little bit too much. And then he goes, art is in the eye of the beholder, or something like that. you're not necessarily wrong. I mean, you can interpret art and you can look at my art and you can, you know, interpret it different ways. But I feel like the artist has, should have an opportunity to explain their intent behind the piece. And I think one reason why that's so important too is because, I'll be honest, I mean, this may sound like kind of crass and unpolished, but whatever. You know, I think a lot of art is just, it's all made up about like what it means or like what it's supposed to represent. And I say that too because like sometimes I'll look at different pieces of art. I'm not trying to like be super judgmental, but I'm just trying to make a point here. And I think it's a fair point. You know, like sometimes I'll look at pieces of art and you can tell with the artist, they have like a particular style and all the pieces are virtually the same. In some cases, not all, but I'm just like referencing, like whenever you see like different pieces, they're generally the same. There's some slight subtleties. And like the title of these pieces are like these really like sophisticated and like highbrow terms. And you're like, well, how does that represent that? It's just lines and shapes, and it's basically the same exact design as the previous piece that you just did. And, you know, I think that a lot of times these pieces are just, like, completely blown out of proportion. So for me, because that is a personal criticism of some art that exists out there, I think an artist needs to be really open and say, look, this is what I was trying to produce. This is what it means. Now, if you see something else, or if you identify with the piece in a different way, then that's great. But I think that we should be able to share that information. I think that is important. And I think it also catches, it ensures that a lot of people don't just like, you know, blow smoke and pretend that there's a lot more going on than what's really going on. I mean, some of these pieces, it still blows my mind. I mean, this is my industry now, but you know, there's some pieces, there's a couple lines and a couple shapes and they're going for like tens of thousands of dollars. And then here, you know, my last piece was 91 hours. It was something that I've never seen anyone else produce, and it's just like Cricketville, but it's all good. I really don't even care anymore. I just like the satisfaction of completing these pieces. So I'm really proud of this piece. This entire episode was supposed to be about this piece, and now I just feel like my window is closing in on me. But here we go. Beach Trip into Ocean City. This is my favorite piece that I've ever created so far. It's something I'm especially proud of. I took so many risks with this piece. And, you know, I'm going to be looking at this on my phone, so I might have to kind of pause to bring this back up. I'm really happy with it. I took so many risks. Yes, the overall idea, you know, actually, had just developed right before I started this. It wasn't a piece that I was intending on creating at all. But I was in Ocean City for our family vacation, and there was just a lot going on. I was dealing with my invasive melanoma diagnosis, and I was strolling the beach one morning, and just the way that it was just a very peaceful, calm morning. I just had the entire beach to myself, and the sun was rising. I look over at the Carousel Hotel, and it just had like this glow to it. And I was just thinking about all the fond memories that I've had in my life, honestly. And I really didn't know exactly what the future held for me. And I was very grateful to have moments like that and to have memories like that and to be in a position where we could rent a hotel room at the Carousel, because it's not cheap. And we never had opportunities like that growing up. We never even dreamed of staying at a hotel on the beach. And so to be able to do that was a dream. It was a really cool moment for me to say that I was able to provide that opportunity for my kids. And so the Carousel was just like, it all just kind of hit me at once. And it was just like, man, this is perfect. This is exactly what this collection is all about. Favorite memories and local landmarks and ways to unite people together under, you know, similar experiences and symbols and landmarks. And it was a way that I could run with my imagination. You know, the Carousel is the name of the hotel, but I could create a carousel in place of the hotel. And then I was like, man, and then my mind just started going, all right, what else can I connect to this painting? What are my other memories? What are other favorite landmarks and destinations? how can I infuse all of that together in one scene? So when I look at this picture, it's just a flood of joy. You know, unfortunately, because I am just so obsessive, I was so hung up on this because I knew that it was a really good idea in theory. But I really didn't know how I was going to capture the carousel. Because something that I've realized is that, you know, there's a certain style or a certain goal that I have with certain objects. But I also recognize that there are certain things that are not my strengths. And at least as of right now, there are certain limitations that I have with my art. But I look at that as a positive. And so instead of getting upset when I'm unable, or at least I don't have the same confidence, or I haven't demonstrated in the past that I can do something, I say, well, if it's too much of a risk, if I really haven't demonstrated that I can, you know, effectively execute that, well, how can I be creative? How can I use my imagination to achieve something similar, but also feed to my strength? How can I work within my like sweet spot of skills? And how can I use my imagination to my advantage to capture the same idea, but maybe in a more creative and imaginative way, and not exposing my weaknesses? And it's really a mindset that I've used my entire life, well, not my entire life, ever since I pursued sobriety and knowing that there were going to be certain obstacles and certain challenges, you know, at that point in my life as a college dropout and someone that, you know, really wasn't happy with my life, I started to make it a game. Like, how can I get back in the game? How can I start to excel at this point in my life? And in reality, I was still very young in the grand scheme of things. But back then, I thought I was like past my window of time. How could I like strategize? How could I create a plan to like really get back on track and really start achieving these really grandiose goals? And so, like I've mentioned before, my art is a reflection of my values and a reflection of my philosophies and my mindset. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, again, we have this room that overlooks the ocean. Essentially, it's overlooking the beach. It's overlooking directly the pool and this like tiki bar area. You know, I'm trying to get out of the sun for various periods of time because of my skin cancer. So I'm on the balcony. I'm looking at the kids playing in the pool directly below my balcony. And I'm looking up and I'm like, God, man, this is such a good idea, but I'm really nervous about painting this carousel because carousels are so intricate. Personally, horses and some animals, but especially horses, I've never really tried to draw them too often, but they don't really come too naturally to me. They're very intimidating for me to paint. And so I'm like, I'm going to have to paint horses and all these like intricate lines, and the animals are going to have to be positioned at all these different angles. And I'm looking at all of these references that I could possibly use. And I'm looking at like, what's a carousel that I have a personal attachment to that I could use? The very first carousel that I ever rode was on the Mall in DC by the Smithsonian. And the second carousel I ever rode as a kid was at Glen Echo in Maryland. And I was looking at those two carousels and it was just, they were too ornate. They were too stylized and too detailed, and the angles were so difficult, and there were so many lines. And with all that line work, with all those gaps, it just wouldn't have looked good because the rest of the painting would have been more solid, I guess. So you would have had all these holes in the middle, the feature of the painting, and everything else would have been different. So it wouldn't have been as cohesive. So I'm like, I almost gave up. I was like, it's not going to work out. It's not going to look good. And so I'm looking over this balcony. I'm looking at the kids. And right behind the pool is the carousel moon bounce. And I'm like, that is perfect. Because it solves all of my problems. It solves all of my dilemmas. It's actually on the grounds of the carousel. And so initially, I tried to match the carousel moon bounce exactly as it appears on the grounds of the carousel. And I actually painted the first layer like that. But if you can imagine a carousel, I mean, you have the different animals are going up and down. And so one horse was higher than the other horse, and it was just creating this imbalance that I didn't like. And even though I'd already invested hours into painting that first layer of the carousel, I decided to scrap it. I decided to essentially waste hours that I had invested. And I was like, you know, this is one of those times that I have to take, you know, an executive decision here, and I have to change it. And even though that's what it looks like on my reference image, I'm going to create something different. And I need to create something that fits with my skill set and fits with this painting. And that's one reason why I love art so much, because there aren't any rules. You do whatever the hell you want to do. And that's what makes art very challenging and very difficult too, because there literally isn't any rule. There's nothing that you have to follow. 91 hours of that, and to walk away and feel incredibly satisfied, is a very difficult feat. I'm just incredibly proud of the way it turned out, because there were so many ways for it to kind of go sideways on me. But I'm just very pleased with how everything kind of came together. So I decided on one horse in the middle, because that's the focus point. And I changed the designs on the horse, and I made it more related to the ocean. So there's like ocean waves right below the saddle. And again, I was like, okay, well, what can I do as far as, you know, people in the moon bounce? I'm not very good at drawing people. I've only officially drawn one face painted one face in my career, and I'm not too pleased with it. So bodies and faces aren't my strength. So how can I avoid showing or exposing my weakness, but still capture the imagination of the viewer? And how can I connect to these memories that I've had in Ocean City? So like, well, one of our favorite places to go is the Candy Kitchen. And that's just a place, a stop that we go at least once. I was like, I can fill the moon bounce with gummy bears. And it's going to be a lot easier for me to paint, but it's also going to make it kind of trippy and kind of psychedelic, because it's completely bizarre that you have these oversized gummy bears jumping in the moon bounce, and that's perfect. And that's one reason why I love surrealism too, is because there's no rules. You just let your imagination roll, and whatever you want to do, you just make it happen. But it made sense based on my strengths, based on my limitations, based on my goal for the project. When you look at it, it's like, is that a gummy bear? But when you start to realize the thought process that goes into it, you start to realize that on the surface it might sound crazy, but it actually makes perfect sense. And that was kind of the goal for this entire painting and every single painting in this collection. But on the surface, you might be asking yourself some questions, but the goal was, when you first look at the painting, that it all flows, that it's all balanced, that there's a variety of colors. And it generally tells a story, but when you start to look at the individual components more closely, they seem to be unrelated. They seem to be completely different. And that was a really fun challenge of this piece. Now, the other focal point that I knew for sure at the very beginning was incorporating the Ocean City logos. So I had the sunset to my left. I had a marlin that's connected to the sunset. So if you're looking at this painting, either on my website, danoilsart.com, or on Instagram, at dan.oils, the marlin and the sunset, that's an official logo that I've connected into the painting. And the OC on the right, that's an official logo. So I wanted to incorporate those two logos as part of the landscape. And I wanted to incorporate the carousel. That I knew. And then, you know, I was just like, okay, what are some other memories? So Fisher's popcorn is one. So the popcorn became the clouds. And then I started to realize, as I took a step back, as I finished the carousel outline and the logo and the popcorn, that it just felt out of balance. In the right side, it just felt like it was missing something. The popcorn clouds are kind of elevated to the left, and there wasn't anything to rival that height on the right, and also serve as a diagonal element from the sunset. I was really just looking at shapes at that point. Like, what shape would work there? And I'm also thinking about, like, what are some shapes of landmarks that I visited that were strong memories for me. And then I started to think about the roller coasters. And I forget the actual name of that roller coaster. There's a couple there. But that roller coaster that you see in the painting is the very first roller coaster that I've ever been on. And I rode that roller coaster with my cousin. My grandmother, she would always take us to places. She took us down to like Rockville, our county seat. And we would stop by and see different court cases because they're open to the public. So we could learn about the judicial system. She took us down to Ocean City. She took us down to all the museums in D.C. on the Mall. So she was very active in our lives growing up. And, you know, it helps to have a cousin that lives in California because when he would come visit, we would always do all the D.C. things. And so she took us down to Ocean City, and it was my very first roller coaster. And I was scared. I was really scared to go on one. But my cousin's a little bit older, and he was like, come on, man, you got to do it. You got to do it. So I finally get on this roller coaster. We start going, and my cousin is just cursing as loud as he can, just screaming these curse words that completely caught me off guard. And he's just letting it fly. And I just thought it was so funny, and it helped me relieve all of my stress and all of my fear. I didn't care anymore, and I started just like yelling these curse words at the top of my lungs, and it was like so freeing. And I stopped feeling so fearful. And we get off the roller coaster. And my grandmother was all like kind of shaken up. And she's like, you know, I don't think we can go back here. I think our time is done here. And we're like, well, what's going on? What's going on, Gran? She's like, you know, there's some people using some really foul language on that roller coaster. And we just looked at each other, and I don't think we laughed, at least right in front of her, but it was pretty funny. The top part, where it turns into an aerial perspective of the ocean, that's one of the elements that I'm the most proud of, that I wasn't anticipating. If you look at the very bottom of the painting, there is a reflective pool. And that's from when, after high tide, the water recedes back, and sometimes if there's like a low area, there is standing water. Well, the actual picture that I took of the carousel that morning, that little pool area exists. That pool area serves as like a real reflection of the carousel and of the lifeguard chair. So everything in the reflection is real. Everything outside the reflection is made up. And all the elements that are either swimming or, you know, driving through the water are made up. But that was fun, like having a sense of realism to kind of shift away from the surrealist aspect of everything. So when you look at the bottom line of that, like, water area, it's like a diagonal. And so I wanted to match that diagonal line up top. So there was balance. So there was symmetry. I guess not symmetry from a top to bottom aspect, but I wanted that bottom line to match up top. And then that's when I realized that I could just turn that into an aerial perspective of the ocean, and I could incorporate a completely new perspective of Ocean City. And that's one of my favorite parts about that entire piece, because I've never seen anyone else do that. And I was just proud of the risk of the idea, but also the risk to carry it out. And I was happy with the way that I was able to execute everything. And then from there, it's just, you know, keeping those values in the back of my mind. How can I create variety of color? How can I create a variety of shapes? How can I create balance? You know, if I have this shape over here, do I have something over here to weigh it down? If I have these colors over here, is this represented over here? And so it's just like really playing with those voids in those spaces and figuring out what can I put there that makes sense, that I'm connected to, and that relates to the theme. So the airplane is from a mini golf that we go to every once in a while. The seagulls are self-explanatory. The palm trees are self-explanatory. Those aren't the exact palm trees that we have in Ocean City, but those are We do have palm trees outside the carousel and at various restaurants and locations in Ocean City. The lifeguard chair is an oversized chair from the same mini golf place that we go to. So that was a lot of fun trying to create a lifeguard chair that no one has probably ever seen before. And then going with that same abstract idea, the gummy bear is the lifeguard. And then the crabs, because, you know, just that's part of our culture over here. And we always try and get crabs, or at least crab cakes, when we're down at Ocean City. A blue heron all the way to the left. The boat is called the Ocean City Rocket. It's basically like a, it's for tourists, for sightseeing. It allows people to, you know, pay for a ticket, and they ride out in the ocean. So I almost put it on top for the aerial perspective, but it just didn't fit as far as the balance and the colors were concerned. So I wanted to put it down there instead. And the two hermit crabs, because a couple years ago we purchased two hermit crabs thinking that it was going to be like, you know, you appease the kids. You know, it's just a rite of passage. You go to Ocean City, you get some hermit crabs for the kids. Or as a kid, I, you know, would get hermit crabs. They last for a couple weeks to a couple months, and, you know, the kids forget about it, or that's what we thought would happen. The first hermit crab lived for about a year, and the second hermit crab lived for about 3 years. So that's why there's two hermit crabs there. And the one crab is inside an Old Bay container as the shell. Old Bay is another cultural element for the state of Maryland. It's a Maryland-created spice. And then the other crab is inside an ice cream cup of one of our favorite ice cream jewels. I really enjoyed just seeing, you know, understanding the core elements of what I was going to put in that painting, and then realized when I had, you know, empty space, or I needed something else to weigh something down, or to create more balance, or to add more color. And that was really what was driving me after a certain point. And then whatever I would come up with, I just decided to go for it. I was just like, this painting needs that. And I'm going to do my best to execute. And as I kept on taking these risks, and it's just like a metaphor for life, you know, as I kept on taking these risks, and as I kept on finding success, I kept on building on that momentum. And I kept on increasing my confidence and my ability to, or my willingness to try these new things and to try these new elements. And at a certain point, I kind of caught myself, because I realized that I wasn't even thinking about it. Like, I wasn't even doubting myself. I just was so confident that I was going to be able to execute it, that it was just like, all right, whatever you dream up, whatever you imagine, you're going to do it, and it's going to work. And I kind of caught myself at the end where I was like, you've been on a roll. Like, don't screw it up with one of your crazy ideas. But I had to like silence that voice, because I didn't want any doubt. I didn't want any negativity. I was on such a roll, and I was in such a positive mindset that I was like, no, man, I'm going to execute this entire piece at a high level, and I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to take my time. And sometimes that can be difficult, because when you're in here at, you know, 9, 10 o'clock, and sometimes on the weekend, I'm in here until like midnight. It's easy to get tired and easy to get kind of complacent and lose your focus. And all it takes really is just like one brushstroke, and it can really mess you up at that stage. If it's early on, then you can just paint over it. You can hide it pretty easily. But when you're making like your finishing touches, when everything else is dry, any mistake or any error in your execution is going to be noticed to a trained eye, or even to an untrained eye, depending on how egregious or glaring of a blunder it is. So you do have to be careful. You know, it's not the same, but I'm going to make an analogy to like surgery, where, you know, surgeons need to be rested, because every movement with their hand matters, because you don't want to make a mistake. You want to be as precise as possible. And so sometimes, you know, that's why, even if I'm feeling good, if I, you know, I'm getting into a rhythm, if I feel that I'm getting really tired, or if I feel like I'm kind of losing my focus, I'll just stop. Especially if I'm like really late in a project, because it's just too much. But that's basically it. And I know that I rambled on for a little bit, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to learn a little bit more about this piece. You know, I could have gone into more detail, maybe shared some more stories, but time goes by so fast that I wasn't able to do that. But I think that this is helpful in understanding the reason why I painted it, the significance behind all the elements and the thought process that went into it, in the hopes that maybe it inspires you, if you're an artist, to kind of see the mindset behind what I'm doing. See if you want to, you know, borrow any of those ideas or techniques, or even if you're just, you know, a casual listener or a casual observer of my art, you know, hopefully now it makes more sense to you and the piece resonates with you on a deeper level than it did initially.
Thanks for listening to the Painting the Midnight Oil podcast. Come back soon.